the next episode of Feral and Fabulous. And I have the most fabulous guest with me again today. I'm so excited. My lovely daughter, Courtney Gill.
Yes. Glad to be back.
Yes. I'm just, we ran out of time last time. And
for
so
sure.
I'm excited to dive into, I don't know how many different topics we have to talk about. We're going to get a little more into the real estate, you know, behind the scenes, kind of like how the sausage is made, you know, that kind of thing. It's going to get, could get ugly, could get a little edgy.
I was thinking like combined, I think we have almost 75 years of experience.
Oh God, don't say that.
Well, okay, maybe. Okay. Maybe not that, quite that long.
Let's damp that number down.
Okay,
that's a little scary because that means that I'm old.
Well, you know.
But that's kind of meaning that you're getting older. So, you know.
Yeah, well, I got licensed in 2000 and started working before that in real estate. So the years have gone by quickly. So
yeah,
they definitely. But I wanted to bring you a gift to celebrate having me back for a second time.
I did see that. Okay. I'll try and be careful because
I mean,
I tend to.
Your only daughter isn't gift enough.
That's true. That's true. How can we top this?
Right?
I mean, the gift has already been given and received. Oh my God. You're amazing. Oh, this is so cool. I am revealing our first merch. I mean, it's like that she's got us Feral and Fabulous shot glasses. And so you must pop the cherry for the Feral and Fabulous tequila shot.
And I got you a case. So all of your guests next year will be able to have their own Feral and Fabulous shot glass to take with you. So they're in the car.
Gosh, that is amazing. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. Mwah. I would get up and hug you and kiss you, but that would mess up our whole setup.
Yes. No. Let's not do that.
I will just hand this to my trusty producer, so without hopefully messing up the mic. So I will try, and if you could scoot that over, that would be fabulous. And of course, where would we be without our Grand Patron? It's actually Platinum Patron. It's Fabuloso. So
I want to know when they're going to be a sponsor of your podcast.
Well,
like when are you going to start selling?
Trust me. Well, I'll find out. I don't know, but I'm telling you, they definitely know that we've been keeping them busy in the production.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, you know, when I go in the liquor store to buy those, they're always like super in the back, you know, you have to kind of hunt people down. And then I remember one year, one of the liquor stores had been broken into and somebody had stolen like several bottles of that. And Guy Fieri had just had his liquor truck robbed of like $1 million worth of tequila. And so he had to lay people off because it was like,
oh my God,
5 years worth of tequila.
Yes. And of course, I should have known something was up because I saw that the producers already had their shots.
Yeah.
And I'm
they
like,
on it.
Yeah, apparently so, because I was like, okay, why are we not doing a shot? I've never not done a shot for an episode.
We wanted to break out the glasses and celebrate them.
Totally get that. Okay. So everybody, we've got Matt Stigliano, Katie Rodriguez at the helm, and cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
Down the hatch.
I need to get out more. That's some, that'll wake you
delicious.
Up for the afternoon.
Yes, yes, it will. Yes, it starts the afternoon off just right. So
for sure on a Monday.
Yes, exactly. But when you're in the podcast room, and I'm excited because you are getting ready to do a podcast, and I think you tell me it's going to be controlling your chaos.
Yes, controlling your chaos. So doing this with you, and we hit 20,000 views, and I was inspired and really want to work on my speaking career and kind of tie it all together. So we're shooting our first episodes this week and next week and should be ready to drop in January.
Cool. How exciting. So what are you guys going to be talking about?
My focus is kind of empowering women entrepreneurs in the lane of being both a mom and a CEO, and not so much boundaries, but more living your life in alignment with what you want for your life. So not what society talks about. So after raising two kids myself, just helping people out.
Yes. No, absolutely. Cool.
Across all the spectrums of business.
Cool. Yeah. I figured it would be a little real estate, a little bit of everything.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
Well, I'm excited. I can't wait. So looking forward to it. So today I was thinking we would dive a little bit more into the whole real estate thing. And I know that we were talking about, you know, several different things as it relates to both of us. obviously are in real estate. We've both been in it for, as you pointed out, 75 years, something like that. So
combined.
We'll just combine. I hope so. And so I feel like one of the things that we were talking about is just some of the frustrations, some of the things that we have been dealing with over the years that have been, again, they wax and wane as to how much at any given time we're frustrated about them. But least to me, just most recently, I feel like one of the things that we've both been frustrated with is just showing etiquette. And by showing etiquette, I mean when you have a property listed and you are, whether you're the buyer's agent, you know, or you're the listing agent, I feel like there's a certain protocol that you follow when you're talking about, you know, setting a property up. And a lot of this starts with the listing agent and how they set up showings or the showing availability of a property through the showing time, which showing time is the name of the company that we use to set up the showings. And so having said all that, I feel like it requires basically both parties to do their job, you know, and set things up appropriately. But lately, I think both of us feel like I'm seeing that listing agents to me are not doing a great job of, or a lot of listing agents are not doing a great job of setting up the listing properly. And then I feel like on the flip side of that, I think a lot of the buyer's agents now are also not doing a great job of, you know, doing the things that, you know, etiquette in our business, you know, says you should. So thoughts on that.
So, I mean, to me, there's five people in that circle, right? You've got the listing agent, you've got the sellers themselves, or in my case, the landlords,
or sure.
Sometimes they're my tenants, right? Because we're showing the last 30 days of a lease. So then you're like setting expectations with people who really don't have any buy-in to the process.
Yeah.
You've got a buyer's agent and then a buyer who all they want to do is go see a house with no sometimes understanding of what that looks like for the people that have to get out of the house or have kids and all of those. And then you have a third party company that as they've gotten bigger and bigger, I feel like customer service has waned and waned. And while they've leaned into technology, sometimes that's not always the best fit. And so also as Sabor's grown, they've taken on other lockboxes with other ABOR and HAR. And so then you're kind of battling what type of lockbox and what type of access. I mean, when we started, nobody had door codes, right? So now it's like the door code, the Ring doorbell, the alarm system, like all these additional layers. And
I don't even think there was a Ring doorbell when we started.
Oh,
heavens no. I have to back that train up just a minute because I think that that's been a more recent development, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And so there's also a complete lack of training when people onboard as agents to how to utilize showing time. I mean, I know I'm guilty of having several assistants and I struggle and muddle my way through like updating showing instructions when we maybe have a tenant move out or something like that. So it's definitely a situation where you've got a lot of people with not a lot of common communication and not a lot of, but like the other day I went to go show a property and they gave me like a 30-minute window and I'm like, well, we're lucky because we have one property, but that's not how this normally works. Like I grew up, I cut my teeth working for you doing Relo, where we would put people in the car at 8 o'clock in the morning and we would go till sundown and we would sometimes see 10, 15 houses back to back to back. And if we fell
there were days when I would show 20 to 22 properties in a day. And that was just a regular Relo day.
Yeah.
I mean, the traffic has gotten so bad now. And of course, I think also people have expanded the areas that they want to look in. So it's really just logistically almost impossible to show that many properties. I'm not saying it can't be done, but with our shutdowns with the roads and all that kind of stuff,
right. That
could be really challenging. But to the point that you brought up that they had given you a 30-minute window, what I've seen is that, again, I think typically what they're not understanding is when an agent sets up a showing, could this be the only property that they're showing? It could be.
They could
only maybe be showing one property.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, in many cases, we are showing multiple properties. So what we do is we have to figure out, okay, which property are we starting at? How many are we seeing? Imagine if we're seeing, let's say, I will still show 15 in a day. But let's just say you're starting at a certain time, you know, 10 a.m., just for argument's sake. And the problem is if you only, and I've had a couple recently that they gave us, it was a vacant property, and they gave me a 15-minute window.
Yeah, that's...
And because there's a super on there, which I'm all about a super, because the super, they can document when you arrive at the property, when you're leaving the property, all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. which I love. I love the documentation. I love that it makes the agent accountable. So I'm all for that. However, when you only give an agent a 15-minute window and they're showing, what if your property 10 out of 15 and you're supposed to hit a 15-minute window? And then the problem is, as your day progresses, you're having to call back into showing time and reset that. And then you have to reset all of it. It becomes this logistical nightmare because you're driving, showing, talking to people about the properties that we've seen. In the meantime, on the phone, on hold with showing time, trying to reschedule as you go because you start blowing through these windows. When they give you 15 minutes, you might have to reschedule that one 4 or 5 times.
Well, and like the one I showed in Spring Branch, it was an acreage property. So we finished with the house like right at the 30-minute marker. And he's like, I want to walk the property. And I'm like, well, technically we're still here and we're out of the house. And so I had to call back to showing time and then wait for approval. And I'm like, so are we going to go stand on the street while I wait for approval? And
exactly.
When I served on the board at SABOR and the executive team, we had a lot of, you know, complaints. We were people had fines associated with showing up at the wrong time and things like that. And we tried to hear the agent out on the situation, but ultimately, you know, the sellers, it's their home. They want to be able to come back home. And so it's this balancing act. So I think a lot of it starts with setting good expectations when the listing agent takes it and says, listen, you have your house on the market. This is going to be a little inconvenient. And in this market, when it's down, the sellers have to appreciate, like, we got to get all the traffic in here we can. And even in a good market, right, when we had 22 showings in a day, you got to be able to accommodate as many as you can with realistic expectations. And obviously people have little kids and they work from home, especially now post-COVID. And so it is a balancing act. But on my end with the tenants, you just expectations and, hey, this is what you signed up for. We tell them at the front of the lease, you have to do this. We do a lot more combination locks on vacant houses, especially because we have vendors coming and going. So it's a lot harder to document and track things.
Sure.
And that's become a little bit more problematic where agents have released lockbox codes to their clients, which is a huge violation.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Proving it and tracking it back down.
Yeah.
We change our codes. We're now going to probably quarterly changing our codes just so that, you know, with the volume of properties we have, we try and keep a consistent code for our, you know, vendors and stuff, but it's just not working. Agents are releasing out our code. So
yeah.
It's a shame. And part of it is, again, we talked about last time, our industry turns over every 5 years, such a dramatic part of it that even when
except for us.
Yeah. 25 years later.
We keep cycling through.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know what cycle I'm on, but I'm like seven. I'm like a dog. I'm like seven years for every 1 year or something like that. I don't know.
I finally reached the age now too, where like I was dealing with an agent the other day and I was like, I got my license the year you were born. Like, this is scary. Like, this is reality. And so I try and be patient. The volume we do, it's hard. I had an agent call me yesterday and she's like, I can't figure out the Supra. And I'm like, it's a Sunday. I'm not interested in teaching you how to use a Supra lockbox. But we walked her through it and all of that. But I think it's just also reminding buyers, like, hey, here's the time commitment, the time constraint we have. We need to kind of try and respect that, especially on your occupieds. But agents then also don't give feedback. So if like it was a bad experience for the seller and then they don't give feedback, you're like getting a triple whammy of they're unhappy because they didn't follow the time boundaries and all that. But there are mechanisms for, you know, resolving that. It's just a shame that it has to get to that and there can't be better communication between all the parties.
Well, and I feel like the brokerage, that's one of the things I love about Keller Williams Legacy is the fact that training is such a critical piece. So like you said, you've got an agent there, newer, and didn't know how to operate a Supra on a Sunday. And so, again, I feel like that kind of goes back to there needs to be training in place so that agents that are newer, which is fine. Everybody's got to start at some point.
Sure.
But they need to be able to go through the motions of learning, you know, how do I access a property? How do I get into the Supra? All that kind of stuff. And so that they're not alone on a Sunday at a property with clients in tow and they don't know how to get in.
And I think that's going to become more and more of a problem as more of these associations split off their MLSs, which most of the time these lockboxes are owned by the MLSs, not by the association. And when you're an agent from San Antonio and you're showing an ABOR property, those are different lockboxes. So even if you're a seasoned agent with SABOR, you may not be with ABOR, and ABOR doesn't use showing time. So I think as more and more mergers and acquisitions happen of associations and MLSs, it's going to definitely change the landscape of how showings are done. Yeah. I still remember when I worked for Keller Williams back in the 90s and I was a receptionist and we used to take handwritten showings and then call for feedback. And so, I mean, everything evolves over time, but I definitely wish there was a way to centralize the process even more than showing time has centralized the process.
Okay. Well, you just said another magic word that I want to touch on, which is feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of, I think, the showing process, right? And I feel like because I do tend to, I list a lot of properties. And so as a listing agent, I've been so frustrated, and especially it's been bad for a few years, but I will tell you it's been exponentially bad in the last probably year or year and a half. Like, I would tell you the majority of times when I have a showing on a property, and I hate to use the word stalking, but I've had to literally, I mean, I will call them, I will email them, I will text them, I will choose all the different methods that you can communicate with another agent, because you never know if it's a young agent, they don't want to talk on the phone, which I get, you know, so
did you DM them?
Yes, I actually slid into some DMs before trying to get feedback. You know, I'm like, hey, you know, I know it's late, but you haven't responded to my other 15, you know, messages.
Yeah.
And so my sellers are just really, they love to know what you thought about the property that you showed 10 days ago when I've probably called you for 10 days or whatever. And so that to me is so frustrating. And it to me is part of being a professional agent. I feel like it's really, as a buyer's agent, I feel like you really should, if you're making an appointment and showing a property, at least be professional enough to give some feedback. It doesn't have to be a dissertation. It does not have to be a full-blown novel.
Right.
But I mean, just say, hey, my clients really liked it. They're considering it. I love when an agent says, you know what? They really liked it. There's a couple of things maybe they didn't like as much, but it's in their top three. They're definitely under consideration, or not going to work. It was a corner lot. They didn't realize it was a corner lot. They don't want a corner lot for whatever reason. I love corner lots. But anyway, whatever reason, it doesn't even matter. I don't necessarily, and this is something that I think buyer's agents fear, I don't have to agree with their feedback. I just want your feedback.
Right.
Even if it's something that the sellers are like, that's ridiculous. That's not true. Whatever. I get that. But I just want to know what was your feedback? What did you think about the property? Sometimes, though, if an agent is showing that many properties, and this can happen, they get confused and they give the wrong feedback for the wrong property. And then I have to talk a seller off the ledge because they're like, they were afraid their kids were going to drown in the pool. It's like, well, this home does not have an in-ground pool. So that happens. And I get that. But I would rather them give me wrong feedback, at least showing me that they're attempting to try and help. They just, you know, messed up on which house it was. But I'm not even getting that. I mean, it's crickets. It's like literally, it doesn't even seem to matter how long they've been in the business. A short amount of time, a long amount of time, they are just not responding.
Well, we utilize the showing time feature where we'll email them three times as a follow-up, and then my team will also text them, and then sometimes I'll call. Obviously, we're dealing kind of in a different with the rental pool, but
yes.
And we don't get a lot of outside agents anymore showing our rental properties ever since the settlement, and so we are blessed that we have somebody in-house that takes a lot of like our Zillow leads and stuff like that. But when I have stuff for sale, it is definitely chasing, or people are just downright ugly, like, I can't believe that room was painted blue. That's not neutral. And it's like, whoa, that was their kids. But like, you know, you can go about it a certain way, just like, hey, the color scheme didn't work in the house. And so that's something that you can overcome as an objection, but you don't have to be quite so negative about it. And so we try and kind of filter those along the way. We also get it all the time where they're like, yeah, just not interested. And it's like, okay, well, can you be a little bit more specific on why they weren't interested?
Yeah.
Like the neighborhood or something along the way, feedback wise. And in my brain for rentals, if we've had 10 showings and we haven't had an application, what is the barrier, right?
Yeah.
Is it the flooring type, you know, pricing? So this market's obviously very different for sellers than it is landlords, but just trying to dive down and figure out, hey, what is it going to take to move this property? Your feedback's valuable. I know some agents have gone to like doing drawings and things like that. And it's like, where have we reached where we're doing that to do like basic common courtesy?
I know. It's crazy. And one of the comments that you made a little bit ago talking about, you know, if you have to extend the showing time that until you get approval, do you need to go ahead and leave the property and walk into the street and you wait there? And then, you know, in most cases, I would say probably more times than not would be my estimate that you are under surveillance when you are showing a property. And I know you and I have had this conversation about that before. And I feel like, again, maybe we can talk about just what the rules are. I think a lot of times sellers don't understand, even if they've been told, they don't understand that it is not legal to use the cameras as listening devices and to be observing and hearing what people are saying, because it's, again, I think one of the rules in Texas, right, that you have to let someone know if you are going to be recording them. Is that
videoing
correct?
Them. Yeah. Yeah. One of the benefits of dating an attorney is that you get those kind of clarifications. But if they have a posting that says you're being monitored, but there is a assumed right to privacy when you're in a private home. So while the sellers have agreed to a listing, ultimately you have, there is a certain amount of privacy. And this is being really challenged on the legal level for like Airbnbs, because people put up cameras and are watching people. And if they have young kids or they're in the backyard and they end up, you know, running around naked or whatever, there's just this slippery slope. And I also tell my clients, like, they want to be in that house and have a conversation, and we want them to have a conversation. We want them to fall in love with this house, talk through it all, and make a decision on site. Like for us, we put up QR codes in our property so you can immediately apply. I want you to like it and apply and be committed.
Like it, and apply.
Exactly.
Like and apply. Subscribe. Same
yes.
thing.
Yes, exactly. And so when you have them being monitored, now, once they're outside and they're on the street, if a Ring doorbell's picking them up, then that's not an assumed right to privacy at that point, because you're in a public setting, just like a park or something like that. But when I was in that million-dollar house, there were cameras all up on the interior, and my client's like, this is annoying. I don't want to talk about this property anymore. Let's just go. And it was like, it could have been a great property, but he was more concerned about what we said than, you know, just the, and he didn't also want it to be known he was out looking for a new house.
Yeah.
He's fairly well known and just didn't want people gossiping. And so it just becomes a slippery slope on it. So we just, on our property management agreements, we have that they can't have recording devices at the property. The Ring doorbells have become kind of a point of contention because the tenants like will take them with them. And then I have no doorbell moving forward, and or the alarms. You know, I'm not a technology person, so I don't want to be monitoring somebody's alarm system right. and the transfer and then getting locked out and the cops being called and all of that. So I definitely think that there's just a lack of acknowledgement and awareness, and that people don't realize that if they are recording someone in a private home, they should post, you are being recorded.
Yeah.
Because that is part of statute.
Right. And if you have some kind of notification or sign up, obviously, then
you're good.
Then you're covered. But I do agree with you. I've had many times where I feel like my buyers really liked a property, but they could tell there were cameras and stuff like that, and said they're like, they kind of know that they're mm-hmm. being probably, even though they're not supposed to be listened to mm-hmm. or observed. And so they don't want to bond with the house. They don't want to envision, I could put my couch here, or I see myself doing this in this home and I'm raising my family, whatever the thing happens to be. And I think that they really will shut down. And that's the last thing, sadly, the very thing that the sellers are preventing from happening is what needed to have happened. Because if they don't bond, if a buyer doesn't bond with the property and they're feeling uncomfortable, then they'll leave and say, show me another one, because mm-hmm. I want to find one that I can truly bond with and get all excited and all that kind of stuff. Or if they want to bond with it, but they're like, okay, I'm going to go outside and go, you know, I love this house, but they don't want to say it when they think the seller is listening to them. And I feel like that really kind of mars the experience for the buyer, because I feel like that they just don't, they don't attach to the property in the way you'd really like them to attach to it.
For sure. And the other thing, you know, I've had the flip side where sellers are like, well, I don't want them to walk off with something and I don't know and I can't monitor it. And I'm like, nobody's carrying a TV, you know, a 60 inch, aren't taking it off the wall. And the
when you've got a licensed agent with you and they are responsible for the clients.
And ultimately, if you've got like prescription meds that you've left out, which you've been told not to leave out and everything else, that's typically in a bathroom anyway. And if somebody's doing that, they're going to be way more sneaky than something a camera, you know, it's just not worth
going to catch anyway.
And as somebody who's had her car stolen out of the driveway on camera and never, that didn't go anywhere. You know, I don't know that having somebody on a camera pocketing the $20 your kids left on the coffee table is really going to move the needle on the conversation. So we saw that a lot at Save War too. We had those cases come to us and where things were caught on video, and it does become a balancing act of what their guaranteed right to privacy was and if something actually occurred in the property that was illegal.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, you just mentioned SABOR again, which is San Antonio, it stands for San Antonio Board of Realtors. I'm curious, you know, what are your thoughts on, obviously, what do you think is going to happen with SABOR? What do you think is going to happen with NAR? Like, what's that?
So, you know, we split off the MLS, which was a conversation when I was on the executive team in 2019, and then it finally happened. And we have Lira, which is our new MLS, which allows for us to merge with other MLSs.
I don't like Lira. She's not nice.
She's not nice.
She's not my friend.
She's not your friend.
No.
Yeah. No. I understand.
I'm just saying.
I no longer am a part of all of that. So
you know, I understand, but I'm just expressing my feelings.
I totally get it. And so I think that the associations, when they had the MLS, had value, right? The data share and the ability to market a property and to have multiple agents, you know, 15,000 agents have access to the information made sense. When you started splitting the MLSs, where now the data is over here and the association's over here, your value to your association becomes, what are you providing for your members and your public? And for years, I had always said, what are we doing to help the average agent? And I go back to post-NAR settlement and scandals. What are you doing today that helps this average agent move the ball forward, either educating them or working for advocacy? So what are you doing at the Hill? What are you doing at different types of city halls, state legislators? And I will say, I think Texas Realtors, out of all 50 states, and I'm fairly well versed just as my role as an RVP at Texas level and a director, former director at NAR level, Texas does a great job of advocacy. They have a location within a mile of Capitol Hill. They are in direct conversation with the governor. We have absolutely passed things that I feel like on a local level with renters ordinances and things that have moved the ball forward that helped the association. But I think you're going to have to double down and show that value now and really communicate it to the average agent, because most of them don't understand the advocacy component and don't understand enough about how government affairs works. And NAR is took such a hit and has such assets that, same with TR. We need to do a better job of really helping this just everyday agent. How can we educate you and arm you so that you can be best equipped to help your clients? I say right now, people are so afraid to buy. And I'm like, this is the time to buy. Like, this is absolutely, you date the rate, you marry the house, and people are so gun shy. And I'm like, I wish we had better communication tools to help new agents explain to the average homeowner that in real estate, any 10-year period, you're always going to see appreciation. Like, this is the time to buy. But, you know, a lot of associations leave that to the brokerages. And so it is just a lot of people and moving parts. I'll be curious to see, you know, NAR has a new CEO. She's been there about a year now. Definitely a mover and shaker and trying to kind of change the way the industry goes. But technology is playing a huge part in that. The agreements with Zillow and ChatGPT integrations and all this stuff. I think NAR needs to make their move, and they need to make it now if they're going to stay relevant.
Right. Right. No, I get that. I mean, definitely it's going to be an interesting upcoming year, I think, to see which way the wind's going to blow on all that. But I do think it will be interesting for sure. So how about contract negotiation?
So I'm big about Dave, and I always have this conversation, the book that we love so much, Never Split the Difference. And
the holidays are always fun at our house when we're talking. You can imagine we talk a lot of real estate all the time, but especially over the holidays.
Well, yeah. And I mean, dating somebody who's a real estate attorney, and just like, because he's always coming at from the legal. And I'm like, well, babes, you need to understand that there's like the legal real estate. And then there's also like street real estate, which is how deals get done.
Street real estate. Oh, I love that term. Yeah. I think I'm going to be a street real estate specialist now.
Well, because he'll look at me and I'm like, I got this. Like, you have to understand there's just a way to make the deal work when it comes to negotiation. And we talk about this all the time. I deal with way more investor clients that are very non-emotion based. And so I tell them, my homeowners, who they never intended this to be, you know, a rental property, they didn't want to be landlords, you have to take the emotion out of this. Right. And when you negotiate, if you can take the emotion out of it, I think most of the time you will win, because it is just such an emotional experience. Yeah. And so I'm guilty of it. I remember when you helped me buy a house and I was like, I just want the house. And you're like, calm down. Like, don't be, just breathe for a second. I had a client the other day who I've helped for a decade, super smart lady. And she was like, and I was like, breathe. Like, the house is not going anywhere. I got this. Just let me handle this. And sure enough, it all worked out. And so I think that a lot of times agents don't take control of the transaction. And your job's to be a trusted advisor. Your job is to lead and learn to negotiate, take the classes, and then learn how to do your job so that you can put your best foot forward for your clients and help them understand that while this is an emotional process, your job is to help them through it and make it as non-emotional as possible.
Don't you feel like, though, that the internet has complicated that whole thing? Because I think that a lot of times consumers, you know, buyers, sellers, either side of the coin, I feel like they use ChatGPT, AI, and they ask a lot of questions. But sometimes it's kind of like this, you know, the phrase, you don't know what you don't know. And a lot of times that's the same with AI. If you don't know the right question to ask, or maybe you do, you've stumbled onto the right question, but you don't know how to interpret the answer correctly, because it may give you the answer, but you may not understand exactly what it is that it's giving you because you don't understand the context in which you've asked and what they're telling you back, you know, and what years of experience can tell you that although just the facts, ma'am, okay, fine, that's the facts, but there can be an interpretation of those facts that can lead you to go this way or that way, depending. And I feel like sometimes the years of experience factors in significantly that all the AI in the world can tell you. But again, if you don't really understand how to interpret that, to me, that can be a problem.
Well, and like this client, for example, I have a couple of clients that I've managed for 10 plus years for that I manage a huge portfolio, a lot of assets, and there is a ton of trust. And so when I tell them I got this, they know that I haven't let them down. And I have a client that has bought houses sight unseen. He'll call me and say, you have $300,000, go buy a house. And he always jokingly tells me, if you screw up, you have to fix it because you're stuck with the house and property management. And so he says, I don't need ChatGPT. I don't need all that. I have Chat Courtney. Like, go, this is why I pay you. You've been doing this 25 years. You know what rents, you know what works. And so find that relationship and hold on to the agent relationship, because people who have been at this a long time, they do have the knowledge. And there are times where I'm like, oh, hey, did you remember you have to register the appliances or do this? And that's something ChatGPT is just not going to tell you, right? That's just things that I've learned, again, from street real estate. That's, we're gonna have exactly. T-shirts that say I do street real estate.
Exactly. We're in the streets.
Yeah, exactly.
We're working the streets.
Selling the streets. And so
I felt like I was working the streets many, many times over the years.
Or the corner, one of the
Either or both.
Selling those corner lots.
Yes. No, exactly. No. Without a doubt, there has been plenty of that over the years. So I've likened it to that on many occasions. So.
Yeah, for
sure. Cool. Well, this has been equally fun, if not more so, from the last time. And so we're going to have you back again, because, again, I feel like we scratched the surface on just a few topics, but there's so much else going on in our industry. So definitely looking forward to having that part three conversation.
Well, I think we're one of the few we're not in a team in the sense we both run our own offices, but both still actively selling. Like there's a lot of very well-known mother-daughter teams, but the mom's retired or doing something else. And so it's fascinating just to hear how different
the other moms they made smarter choices than I did. They're not still schlepping like me, but it's just in my blood. So, you know, I was raised in the business and,
Tell people I have no other skills. Like I got my real estate license while I was still in high school. I sold my first house while I was still in high school. And so I literally have no other skills. And so,
you have plenty of skills.
It is interesting because we talk about things all the time, how different our perspective is, even though it's still a lot the same in customer service driven and longevity, how we come at things differently. And so, I'm looking forward to, and hopefully this episode, so last time we did 20,000 plus views, hopefully this one breaks the 50. I hear you're going to get on a plane to Europe if we do 50,000 on this episode.
Who said that?
Well, I think you did in a moment of martinis.
Okay. Okay. That probably was a martini moment. So
please share, everyone. We need 50,000 views. Greece, here we come.
Like and subscribe. So, I probably am guilty if it was a martini moment. So, anyway, very cool. So, okay. Well, now we come.
Paddles up.
Now we come to the next part of the podcast, which is the feral or fabulous. You've already got the trusty paddle.
Yes.
And so I've got several topics for you. I'm going to start it off with the Goo Goo Dolls.
Oh, so fabulous. So we are actually flying to Atlantic City. So I'm trying to do all 50 states by the time I turn 50. And
by do, what does that mean?
We have to either go to a concert or experience or something in each of the states. Like we went to the balloon festival in New Mexico. And so just attend something or a casino or just an experience in each one of those cities. And so we're flying into Philadelphia, driving to Atlantic City, staying at Caesars, our favorite, and then doing Delaware, doing dinner and stuff, all three of those. So,
and is that soon? Do you have that coming up?
Next week. And John Resnick just turned 60, and I would also lick Jell-O off of him.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, the list of Jell-O licked men is growing.
I'm never going to hear the end of this from JGP. We could call it a woman.
Definitely. You have a type.
I do have a type.
You do have a type.
Yes,
so
for sure.
Okay. Curling iron.
Feral. Okay. Because I have super straight hair and it just like falls out. And your granddaughters both have like Dyson air wraps. And so Vivian, like when I'm like, remember, child, you're on my payroll. Can you come air wrap my hair? She'll do it. But it's a straight, like, I just, the curls don't last in my hair. So.
Yeah. So you're not a fan of a curling
iron. No. And I have too many like PTSD moments from like burning the side of my head in middle school where like, you know, you had the scar and the scabbing. Yes. So it didn't work out so well.
Yeah, absolutely. No, understand and basically agree. Lululemon.
Okay. I'm going with fabulous. I understand that Lulu has been taken over by ALO.
Oh, has it? I have no idea.
Oh, your grandkids do because they're like, Lulu's out. Because I was like, hey, let's go to Santa Marcos and go buy Lulu. And they were like, Mom, no, it's Aloe.
I think. Okay, I think Aloe.
Yeah, I don't know. So
I did not know this.
I still wear my Lulus to the gym every day.
Yeah, so. I love Lulu.
It is what it is.
It's so soft and buttery. And
oh, for sure. The aligns that you got me hooked on are like butter.
They're like
and Lisa.
Butter.
Lisa was the one who taught me, and I have all my joggers, and so they're fabulous.
No, I agree. Yes. I totally. I'm down with Lulu. So I totally agree. They're very. They're comfort. Instead of comfort food, they allow you to enjoy comfort food because they are comfort attire.
And I wonder if licking Jello comfort attire would probably be best for.
Maybe so. That sounds like a whole other product
topic.
Line.
Yeah. That topic. Sounds like something that's waiting to be filtered by the FCC.
Topic and definitely filtering. Okay. Tattoos.
Okay. You're going to be shocked by this one.
Okay. I'm sitting.
Fabulous. I'm actually getting one. So my significant other has a sleeve and has ankle, like all this. And so we have like been back and forth about commitment and all this other stuff. And so we saw F1 and Brad Pitt has a hot dog doing this on it. So I agreed to get a hot dog doing this on my lower back next week. His tattoo girl's going to be in town from Atlanta. So
I did not know
you
this.
Didn't. We were going to surprise you Christmas Eve, but here we are. So I'm getting another tattoo. Oh, even though I had the last one removed, I'm going at it again. So
yes.
We'll
okay.
See. Yes.
Well, I guess that's going to be a proud mom moment.
Yes.
That my oldest and only daughter is getting
a Brad Pitt tattoo.
A Brad Pitt tattoo.
Yes. Again, another Jell-O boy. So
that list is growing.
Yes.
That's going to require an oversized t-shirt, I think, to fit all the, you know, qualifiers on it.
For sure.
Okay, cool. Well, you know, I love tattoos. So,
yes.
You know, I'm happy about that. Okay. Monopoly.
I feel like this is a fabulous moment. Only because I'm in real estate and we're in real estate, but it takes forever. And then the kids get mad when they lose and it becomes like a whole thing.
Well, you've always, since you were a little kid.
I'm a bad loser.
Well, you're a terrible loser.
I'm a terrible loser.
Let's just classify
I'm
that
super competitive.
Right now. You were super competitive, which, okay, all good, but you were a horrible loser. But you always wanted to be banker. Like, you will not play if you were not in control of the bank, which to me, when you're in control of the bank, you can also kind of control what's happening.
Well, it's just like real estate transactions. So when you are the bank, you get to control the transaction.
True.
And so I would argue I'm just more of a control freak. And I set myself up and put myself in positions where I can get my way. And so I would argue that I didn't cheat as much as I was just setting myself up for success.
Yeah, no. I get that. It's just like I said, you wanted to be in control of everything you could possibly
control. My chaos that way. You know, you don't want to lose. It is chaotic to lose. No one wants to lose. Who wants to lose?
Yes. No.
My Gabby is like, I just keep playing soccer. And I'm like, kid, you're like on a team that's like 0-40. And she's like, well, I just like to play for fun. And I'm like, who plays anything for fun?
Well, I think I know I was raised in a different era. I know you were raised in a different era. And, you know, definitely I know that My dad in particular was, if you were not the best at something, you might as well not even do it.
Oh, I remember getting second place at state and calling him in tears. And I was just like, I should have won. I mean, debate's super subjective.
Yeah.
And so it's not like a point, you know. And so I remember just being devastated at that. And so not that I've forgotten that.
Bitter party of one again. So.
Yeah, exactly.
I get that. Okay. My last one for you. Blue cheese.
That is totally fabulous. I was listening to somebody the other day talk about blue cheese olives, and it is offensive if a nice like steak restaurant will not go do blue cheese olives.
I
like
agree.
When the waiter's like, oh, we don't do those. And I'm like, oh, but you do because you offer a wedge. And I know for a fact the bartender has olives back there.
Yeah.
So you need to go figure it out. Like, yeah. Just bring me a cup of blue cheese. And if I have to do it, I'll do it. But yeah no, for sure. They're thebomb.com.
I agree with you 100%. I love blue cheese. Like, I think that is my favorite. That's my cheese of choice.
I have definitely expanded my cheese palette lately because it's high in protein and enjoy different types. But blue cheese is the OG cheese of the Maytag blue cheese, especially. Like, that brand is so good.
Cool.
So.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you again.
Yes, it's lovely been fabulous daughter. As always.
Yes.
Next time we'll have to do another shot and
yes.
have a little bit more absolutely. Fun.
Well, now we have the official Feral and Fabulous shot glasses. So I am looking forward to that. Many, many more toasts ahead.
Yes,
so
for sure.
Thank you guys for joining us for another episode of Feral and Fabulous. And we look forward to seeing you next time. Keep on keeping on.